Welcome to Metacast. I'm Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen.
This is our second in a series covering the Scrum roles.
Yep, we're going to look at the role of the product owner.
Yeah, we did Scrum Master last time, so we're on to product owners. After a bit of a late start, somebody got lost on the way to somebody else's house. How that happened, I don't know.
But what's important, Josh, is you found your way.
I got there.
You got there.
I did through teamwork.
And technology, actually. Yeah. That phone thing really helped you a lot.
It was so terrible. Okay, so on to product owners. So I know somebody that's written books and stuff on product ownership and things like that. Do you know anybody that's done that?
I don't. But
you don't?
I don't.
You should.
No, I have. If folks aren't aware of it, and I think there's only one person who's purchased a book, so very few folks are aware of it. I have written a book on product ownership. It came out of... it's really, I don't have a classic product owner background. You know that, Josh. I'm more of a coach and a scrum master, but I've done a lot of, like, story development and things like that, and it was just observations. What inspired the book was, one, how little guidance there is in the community, or there was, it's getting better, how little guidance there was about what a product owner should do and what good is,
right.
and two, my own experiences of, you know, it just really, I saw teams challenged by bad product owners,
right.
And I wanted to provide some guidance for that, so I'll pull some bits of that out. Yeah, in fact, anyone who's listening to the Metacast, you're going to hear strong opinions from me just because they come from the book and because of those lessons.
Can you rattle off the ISBN number?
I cannot rattle off the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, I can't.
All right. So to me, I think that's the hardest role to fill. I don't know if you agree, but to fill successfully. I think there's lots of people that will fill that role. But as far as doing it right, I hope I didn't say that about Scrum Masters last time, but I think the product owner, in my experience, has been the hardest one for people to do and do well, potentially because of the lack of leadership that was out there. There have been a little bit more where some of the folks I've worked with have gone to product owner training and things like that, and that seems to have helped. But it is a little bit vague because you're dealing with the users and trying to do that interpretation for the team, and there's the concept of the single wringable neck that I want to talk to you about a little bit later, and we'll get into that.
We should get that up there.
I think it's a tough role that...
One of the things I did, it wasn't early in the book, but it was along, there's a website, or there's a company called Pragmatic Marketing, and they're really directed towards traditional product managers. Product marketing,
right?
And they do courseware. They do, so they'll go out and they do public courses. They're very well respected in the community, nationwide. So it's not a small company. And they have a chart. If you go to their website, you'll see this chart, and it's a block diagram or sort of a hierarchy chart, and it's talking about the role of the product manager, not the product owner. And but it's like, what do product managers do? And there's,
right.
I think there's 43 plus or minus. I may get this wrong. But 43 plus or minus a couple boxes on this chart of the stuff that product managers have to do. The product owner role only maps to like 13. I did an analysis, a real quick analysis,
right.
And like counted boxes and which ones and did a quick mapping. But only like 13 or 14 of the boxes map to the product owner. So the point is, in a lot of companies, they'll take a product manager who's trying to fill what all of those. That's their job,
right?
And they say, oh, be a product owner, which is sort of a full-time job in and of themselves.
Right.
And it's sort of a recipe for disaster. So it is, depending on your role and the organization, it's an incredibly hard job.
Yeah.
And I think the agilists don't appreciate the breadth of product marketing very well.
Right.
So, for example, in my current workplace, we have product managers who we've assigned to product owner roles. And they're torn because they're not getting, for example, one of the boxes that the product owner doesn't cover is what, getting out and talking to customers.
Right.
Guess what?
Yeah.
I think that's an important part of the role.
Right.
And spending almost, you know, that could be what, 50% of your time going out, showing off software, getting feedback. And it really doesn't discriminate, the product owner doesn't accommodate that so well. So I sort of agree with you that it's a tough role.
But the way I view it is the product owner is the link between the team and the user. So I think users, customers, whatever, the end user. So I think that they do need to do part of that. Otherwise, where does that come from?
They do need to do what?
Spend time with the user, spend time with...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's a question of how much time...
Right.
But, you know,
how much time can they really devote to it?
Yeah, well, one of the things I talked about in the book early on is I said, I think a product owner has four faces. I'd like to hear your response. I think a product owner is part... Let's see, what was it? I'm trying to remember. It was part leader.
Right.
They were part product manager.
Mm-hmm.
They were part project manager. And they were part BA. Meaning a business, a requirement writer, a use case writer.
Right. And that third one is where I've seen a lot of people get into trouble, is they take their project management role potentially too strong and end up trying to drive and derailing the agile process. And that's where I've seen a lot of struggles with teams that I've been a part of or tried to help coach, where the product owner came from a heavy project management background and just could not let go of classic command and control, mm-hmm. things like that, of these are the tasks that you're going to do, and that's the way it is, and tough cookies.
See, that's a balancing act, I think, for the product owner. Why I say project manager, if you think of a backlog, you may disagree with this, and that's okay, but I think of a product backlog as sort of having milestones and things in it. So, for example, it's not just stories.
Right.
It's
barking dogs.
It's barking dogs. And there's a lot of barking dogs. There was a barking dog pause there. I apologize to the audience, but there are animals, right? It's not just us. It's early in the morning and the animals are restless. I'm having some stuff delivered to the house. But back to, I think, the project manager side of it is the backlog to me is a project plan or a workflow. So, you know, the early stuff is like early investigative tasks, and the later stuff, if you're getting ready for a release, is release tasks. Might be testing, might be integration, might be writing a document or doing installation guides or release notes and things like that. So I think the product owner, they do have to look at their backlog as not just being a blind series of stories around features, but there's other stuff in there, ready, you know, getting it ready for deployment, for a release point. But you're right. So looking at it as a lightweight project manager, a lot of them will take that as a heavyweight project management. And that's not what I'm referring to.
That's been, okay, so we've kind of beat around the bush. Let's talk about, kind of like we did with the Scrum Masters, some of the good aspects and then some of the bad aspects. So what are one or two, three, five, whatever the right number is, traits that to you, looking at a good product owner, that you say, yeah, they're good because of this?
I think they work hard. So one thing would be they would work hard on the backlog, and they would work with their team to socialize a set of stories that are both short-term, mid-term, and long-term focused. And as part of that, they're not just business stories, but they also think of architecture. They think of quality. They think of their product set as multidimensional, not just feature dimensioned.
Mm-hmm.
So they're thinking of technical debt, and they're thinking of bug fixes. So, you know, I think of them as a farmer. So I think one aspect, if they're really, you know, tending the field, if they're really tending the field of the backlog really well with the team, and making it relevant and making it real and engaging the team in that, that to me is the sign of a good product owner.
I would agree that, and I don't like the term socialize just because it's overused in my company. It's like socialize this with the team. Like, what does that mean?
I've gotten people are busting my chops about overusing it in my current company.
But
you're right.
But I think it's a good term for what you're talking about with the backlog. That's where I've seen product owners struggle, is really doing the socialization of what this feature or story really means to the user and getting the team to understand that. Just the other day, I got an email from the team got an email from a team member saying, why are we doing this? This doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I had to go over to the product owner. I'm like, how come they don't know why the users need this? You know, that needs to be like step number 1A in going through the backlog and the grooming and going through that process. They need to understand why, because they might be able to help steer this in a better direction. You know,
well, let's even step up. I mean, I'm gonna say what you just said is number two, which is they have to connect the dots.
Right.
So let's have a well-groomed backlog be number one, right? Multidimensionally and forecast into the future. But I think what you said something different, which is really important. It's the product owner has to connect the dots of the stories together for the team.
Yeah.
Right. And that's crucial for engineers to get that, because one of the things is we don't architect ahead. Right. You rarely are writing big bang architectural documents. So the compensation for that, I think, is the product owner needs to share the vision and the direction with the team, so that when they're doing incremental architecture, they're not doing bad things. Right. Right? They get it.
Right.
That's sort of that's the drive. And I think very few Agile teams get this.
Right. Yep.
Right. But it's that connect the dots stuff is sort of an architectural activity as well as like a product vision activity.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's been the biggest struggle that I've seen in the past 6 months, where the teams just don't understand why we're doing this feature, or this doesn't make sense, or I don't like it. And if you don't like it, that's fine. But if you understand the reasoning, then I think it'll make sense and you'll put your heart into it and make it as good as you can.
Well, not just that. I mean, you're right. It's that. And they partner. They get it.
Right.
Right? They get it. They have some energy around, now I get how these dots are connected. Can I know where we're going. Can I do it, efficiently from a building it perspective, right? What about a third one to me might be trust the team. So a product owner, and they're in a really hard spot sometimes because they have tremendous business pressure. But if the team, so sometimes you go in and it's like you hear, you always hear more points on the story than you want, right?
Right.
So things are always bigger. And I think good product owners, no matter how much external pressure they have, they sort of, they'll push on the team a little bit, but at the end of the day, they're pretty effective at trusting the team.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah, that's a key piece of being able to trust them. But the opposite is to be able to not settle, right? So ask those questions. And I had to talk with the team just a couple weeks ago. We were doing estimations, and like, why is the product owners and the managers always trying to push for smaller estimates? So we're not trying to push for smaller estimates. We just want to make sure they're right. It's completely within the product owner's right to ask a question of, why is it that way? Why is it this big?
Yep.
And you should be able to defend it and say, well, it's this because of this, this, and this. And then they should say, oh, okay, I get it, and let's move on, right? So it's not a grilling trying to drive down estimates. It's understanding and making sure that everything's thought through. That's all. So just, but knowing when to back off and say, okay, if you say that's what it is, that's what it is.
There's a cultural dynamic to that too of teams. I hear what you're saying. You got to be careful about how you push teams individually, because a lot of times that talk, I just wrote a 2-part blog post, and I should share it with you. I'd be interested.
You should even put it on Metacast.
And I should put it on Metacast.
You should have links.
I should have links. And I wrote it. And from that, so how do you want your software as the title? Do you want it good? Or do you want it fast?
Right.
And I was talking about the balance there. And one of the key things I said is the conversations, how many times we ask for estimates, it influences people's behavior.
Right. Yeah.
Right, so consciously and subconsciously. So you have to be really careful about the culture of the team. I'm not disagreeing with you, but you have to be really careful about how you. Because if you keep asking, for example, what I've observed is if you keep challenging every estimate, what will happen is the team will start doing what?
Padding
up. No. They'll start cutting. So they'll either start padding or they'll start cutting just to please you.
Right.
They're like, you know what? I'm tired of Josh busting my chops. Right. He always wants it half. So if it's an 8-point story, I'm going to throw a 3 at Josh. He'll shut up. He'll take it.
No, but I don't. But see, I should ask the opposite question of, man, that seems small. Why?
Actually, in my blog post, I think you should harp on quality and let the team. So ask your questions around. Don't talk about time.
Right.
Talk about what? Design integrity. Talk about completeness. Talk about quality. And
my question isn't as simple as why.
Right.
Right. So it's, shouldn't we be doing this? Does that include the unit testing?
Exactly.
Or whatever, things like that. So to me, it goes either way. And teams, it's kind of like the news, right? Teams only hear the bad stuff and they don't hear the good stuff. So they only hear you asking, well, why is that 5?
Correct.
It feels more like 3 to me, and here's why. But they always forget whenever you say, well, 3, really? Shouldn't that be like 6?
They absolutely forget. You know, in my blog, and I'm not pushing it down your throat, but in my blog post, I say for every 10 questions a leader asks of a team, particularly a new Agile team, 9 of them should be quality focused and 1 should be time focused. Right. And that ratio may sound odd, but it's because, and again, it goes back to waterfall, our waterfall patterns. What's our baseline? Our baseline is just what, you know, the man is telling me what to do.
Right,
man wants to hear a number. I'm going to give the man a number.
Right.
And shut him up, right? Has no basis in reality. So they just succumb or they pad or whatever. But there's all that bad behavior and people sort of fall back to that. I went off on a tangent there with the blog post.
That's all right.
What's another one for product owners? So we have 3. So we have what? Trust, connect the dots, and backlog grooming. I'm thinking there has to be, you know, I think we touched on it. I'm going to throw it out there, see, and you need to respond.
I will.
I think that customer connection.
Yeah.
So customer connection, but not just connecting to the customer. I think the team, you know, like there's this innate responsibility of the team to write good software. I think there's an innate responsibility in the product owner to get the requirements right.
Right.
So they have to bust their butt to get customer like intimacy.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, you never want to build something that's not used. I saw some estimate on the number of features that go unused by users. It was an astonishing number. It's like 54% from some survey that was done. And nobody likes writing that software. Nobody likes pouring their heart and soul into a feature that never gets used or could have gotten used if you got that feedback from that user after the first demo or something like that, where you can change direction and really make it even more useful than anybody ever expected. So it's got to be a consistent and continuing that conversation throughout the project with the users, because a lot of people will hear requirements, right? And they'll think up front, yeah, this is Agile and you should get the requirements as things come onto your backlog and things like that. But a lot of people will think up front, and it's got to be ongoing throughout delivery.
Absolutely. So when a customer cuts a feature or when the product owner, you know, compromises on scope, it's that effective. When they push really hard and say, you know, this one, we need it in 3 days, that the team actually, you know, guess what? They really, really, really need it. It's customer intense. It's customer connected, right? So the fourth one would be that customer connection. We have to round it out to 5. Yeah, we have to have 5. Is there a fifth one?
Let's see. Hair color, eye color doesn't matter.
I could add one. Well, so I want to propose one to you. So I'm a proponent. You know, there's all this discussion of, is the Scrum Master a team member or not?
Is the product owner, discussion about this before.
Is the product owner a team member or not? I'm going to say that maybe the fifth element is to be a trusted, responsible team member. Would be the fifth sort of banner or characteristic of a good product owner. Now I'm waiting. You're giving me the evil eye.
Well,
what do you think?
It's tough. I mean, I think they are a part of the team, but they do need to spend some time away from the team. That doesn't mean they're not a part of the team. And you and I, there's that picture that I had in one presentation that kind of sparked this discussion, where I had the team as a circle, and the product owner is like orbiting that circle as a separate circle that I don't think Mr. Bob liked too much.
It's not like, it's, you know what, it's not that I'm stuck in it. So it's not an org chart thing,
right,
Josh. It's a sort of mentality thing. I'll give you an example of what I mean, and maybe, you'll disagree.
Here's how I, let me back up.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like an electron in an atom. You never really know where it is, but you have a general idea. Right, so it's got that orbit that it's in. So it's kind of moving around. So it's a part of the atom, but you never know where it is.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we moved from Agile and Scrum to electrophysics, and I see that connection. So we are now going to start talking molecular physics for the next 28 metacasts.
Sounds good to me.
What the hell was that?
Good. It popped into my head. What do you want?
Now I'm going to talk about, you know, farm animals. Well, now there's a horse and there's a pig running around the farm. No, I'm just joshing you, Josh. But what I was going to say is, let me give you a characteristic of it. I don't really care if they're in the team. I care that they behave, you know, well, and they care about their team. So one example would be, let's say the team is doing some testing at the end of a sprint, And who would be one of the best persons to jump in and to just help out with some feature-based testing, acceptance testing, even along the way? To me, a product owner is in a wonderful place to do that.
Yeah.
You could even argue, well, now they're doing work, right? Oh, by, you know, quote-unquote, they're doing work, so they're a pig. And they're doing some work. They might even have a card. They might even have a task card as part of sprint planning. They might have even planned that as part of sprint planning. I think that kind of healthy stuff, really, one, it's in their wheelhouse of being able to do it, and two, it sends just a wonderful message to the team that they're, you know, there's engagement in stories, then there's engagement in that I care about you guys.
Exactly.
And I want to help you where I can.
Yeah, it sends a tremendous message of let's do whatever we can to get it done.
So that's what I'm really saying. I don't care if it's an electron or a...
What's wrong with quantum physics?
I'm okay with that. So it's for that level of engagement. So is that our five? Are you okay with that as a fifth one?
I was okay with four.
Okay.
Five's, so we have this, five's gravy.
So we have it's gravy. So we have a bonus. We have a bonus there. Where else do we want to explore with? So that was sort of the best. Why don't we go to some anti-patterns, some real quick anti-patterns that we've seen?
We got to get three.
Or whatever the number is, right?
No. You made us get to five.
I don't know if we have to beat them to death. We could just list the anti-patterns.
Beating. All right. Okay, go. I'm drawing a blank. I hope you have one.
So, product owners that tell the team, that push on the team, not just from estimates, but tell them how to design their code.
Right.
Product owners that, based on the point estimates, they're like, oh, I don't like that. we'll cut out some things. And that's, I didn't like the eight, so we'll cut out some things. But they're really not cutting scope. They're actually cutting the design characteristics of the team. And they do that very blatantly, and they do that all the time. Typically, those product owners have a development background, or would have, or think they would have a development background.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Okay, so the one for me that bothers me the most, and we talked about a little bit, is the project management piece of potentially pre-grooming a story, saying, here are the five tasks, go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually, you just gave it a really extreme example. So if they're doing that, shoot them, right?
Yeah,
so
there's
doing the tasks at a backlog level, but if they're being so presumptuous, they're like sprinkling tasks into whatever you're using to store your stories.
Right.
Oh, shoot those.
Yes. Well, for you, Ben, the team was like, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
How broken is that?
Yeah, very. Shattered.
Another thing is product owners who are unavailable to their team, period. They're traveling too much. They're out of the office. They don't care about their team. And you know what? It's not personal. They're torn because of that 43 map thing that I was talking about, but they really just don't have the time for their team.
Right,
would be an anti-pattern that I've seen. And teams struggle with that.
Yeah.
Right. And then they might say, oh, just I trust my team. Just make it up. No, you can't. Teams need a customer, agile teams need a customer that they can touch and feel regularly.
Right, okay.
That's three,
we got it. That was like super speed.
But I mean, is there more than that?
Oh.
Come on, there's more anti-patterns. Yeah.
We have to excel.
The audience wants some. You can learn from anti-patterns, right? You can say, oh, that's an anti-pattern. How do we do that? Multiple products. Here's one. This is a test, because I have a competitor book. There's a couple books on the market now from product owners. And
we need to beat them.
I read a competitor's book, and there's some things I love in it, and there's some things I'm like, you are the biggest moron on the planet. I'm like, how can you think that way? And so one of the things is, you know, can you have multiple product owners for this same team?
I don't think so. To me, it's a lot like, you need a single direction, right? Of a single voice of this is the direction that we're going, and no matter how in sync those two people believe they are, they're not going to be. And you're going to give mixed messages. Teams are going to know. They're going to question doneness. They're going to question everything of, okay, so do I have to ask both of you whether it's done, or what happens if this person says it's done?
So multiple product owners is sort of an anti-pattern.
To me, absolutely.
That's fine.
I mean, just
so, can a product owner have a helper, though? So, for example, I have a product owner, and then could they have a BA that writes stories for them?
Yeah, but there has to be back to the single ringable neck.
So there's a single voice.
Yes, single voice, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It's like in Office Space. He saw Office Space, right?
Yep.
So he, in the start of the movie, he talks about how when he does something wrong, he hears it from seven different people in seven different ways.
Yep. Right.
So it's the same thing. It just makes life more difficult.
I agree that multiples are, and I've seen the anti-pattern, right? It says the team doesn't know how to behave with that.
Right.
It's not even a question of mom versus dad and being able to tie. It's the team doesn't know how to behave to the feedback, and they get inconsistent messages.
All right. So let's spin that a little bit. So let's say you work at a company that has, like, six teams, product owner for six teams. Do you believe that there needs to be, like, a meta product owner
absolutely,
that kind of guides the product owners
absolutely
in their direction?
Absolutely.
You don't view that as potentially two voices?
No, I don't. It's their responsibility. So there's a single voice per team. But if you think about it, there's a unifying voice for the cross, so for all
for the
cross
product.
Team, for the product itself, for the cross team dependencies. And so who's hurting the six? And I mean that in a respectful way. The person who's maintaining consistency there. And if folks are disagreeing, and there's a lot of disagreement there in feature cohesion in evolution, that's the meta product owner. In fact, most of the agile pundits, when they talk about scaling from a product organization perspective, from a product management perspective, they talk about, you know, directors, or, and most organizations have this,
right?
Well, there's
they have
line
it, but
product managers.
Are they really fulfilling that role?
So you hit an issue, right? So they have a director or a VP of product management. Clearly, they have someone who has the title in the organization to assume that role. Are they assuming it in a way that's healthy for all of those agile teams to be cared and fed for well?
Right.
That's the gap sometimes, right? It's the time gap.
Right.
So if you think that in product management organizations, if the line product managers have a conflict in time, that executive has even, you know, more of a conflict in time.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen that as an anti-pattern a lot.
All right.
What about single wrinkle neck? You deferred that.
Well, to me, that's a topic that kind of gets its own chapter.
Do you think so?
Are you ready to talk?
Sure.
Because I was thinking about this last night.
What, the single wrinkle neck?
Yeah.
It's a bad term, though. I think
it is and it isn't, right? So I agree and disagree with it all at the same time, right? So it's that single voice, right, that is the person connecting the dots that works with the users. So what is it if it's not a single wrinkle neck? Is it a good image? No. But how else would you describe it?
So let me call it the singular customer, the focused customer voice.
Yeah, okay. That's a nice spin on it.
Schwaber's gotten a lot of crap about using that because it has such a threatening connotation to it, right? You're fired. You're dead.
Right.
Right. You're wrung out. What he was trying to say, and he probably did it poorly in retrospect, is he was looking for, you are, out of the whole team, out of the whole Agile team, he was trying to say, you are the most important part.
Right.
You are the connector to the to the team. You are the connector to not just even to the reality, but to perceptions.
They are the neck.
Right.
Connects the head to the body.
Right. If the team succeeds, you succeed. Right. If the team, from a business point of view, if the team fails, you fail.
Right.
And it's primarily, right, and it's a team. So there's a lot of debate now in the Agile community talking about team failure. You want to emphasize team.
Yeah.
But the product owner plays such a fundamental role in feeding the work and making good decisions, customer-driven, prioritized decisions, very nimbly. I think they are the unifying voice. They are most responsible.
Yeah, but I don't think teams fail because a product owner makes bad decisions. I think teams fail because they don't deliver effectively. Right? I don't think your project will fail if a product owner makes a couple bad decisions versus teams failing to deliver consistently. I think if I look at projects that fail and ones that get people fired, it's not a product owner making a bad choice here or there. It's the teams failing. You seem to disagree. You had a disagreeing
look. No, I don't. I'm thinking, actually, which is novel for me. Usually I talk first, and you know that. And
right.
I'm actually trying to digest what you're saying. I don't know if I'd buy it totally. I buy it. I mean, I think there is a delivery. So what you're saying is delivery is counts,
right?
At the end of the day, if it's success or failure, so delivery dynamics. Well, but the product owner plays, if they're a member of the team, they play a part in that.
But I think if the team is delivering on consistently and awesomely on everything the product owner asks for, if the product owner has a handful of misses, I don't think the project's going to be viewed as a failure. But I think if the product owner is always asking, saying, let's work on the right thing, but the team is delivering poorly,
right,
that's a much different kind of issue.
But there's all this there's nuance is why I'm wrinkling my forehead, which is, let me give you another scenario where the product owner constantly pushes the team to compromise quality.
Right.
So the team delivers what they were asked to do. There are quality issues, bug issues that are getting produced into the field. The immediate feeling is what success.
Right.
We have now produced something on time, and right. we've delivered crap to the field. We did that. Now, who's responsible? The product owner, in my mind, would be more responsible than the team. Although the team should have pushed back. Right, argue that the team should have pushed back. When will that failure, let's say it's successful, when will that failure be realized later? Right, so that's there's nuance. I think there's failure and success nuance that the product owner and the team, there's a dance, I think, that has to happen.
Yeah, and it's never one or the other. Right? So I was making the extreme case that it's either this or this, right? Yeah. It's always a combo player.
I think it's the nuance that that's what I want to have come from the product owner.
Right.
That new, I think they're the ones that are driving that, when to hold them, when to fold them. They're doing this, it's not just the damn story cards. It's almost how they're interacting with their team, think of them as a conductor, mm-hmm. how they're conducting, how they're getting folks to stretch, how they're doing it effectively, how they're reading the market. It's not even just the market. How about the quality landscape of the market?
Right.
Right. It's like, what bugs will my market tolerate, and trying to get that fine line implemented within the team. They are that single, again, I want the team to be responsible, right, or to be accountable. But I think if you wanted to poke someone out, that conductor is driving results.
Conductor or a train conductor?
Like a musical conductor, right? I like the analogy lately. I'm stuck on an orchestra analogy lately. So I'll share this with you. I think the conductor is the scrum master. I think
said the conductor was the product
owner. No, but with the product owner, I think is the author of the music, is the Johann Sebastian Bach. The team is the orchestra, and the scrum master sort of is the conductor, but you're feeding these notes, and it's the notes that you're feeding into the team, right? Okay. And the balance of the notes that you're feeding into the team, the quality of those notes. So
you get on me about electrons and their relative location to the nucleus.
Oh, man. I just opened kimono there, and you just, like, slammed me back. Nicely done, sir.
Thank you. I've been waiting. I had that in my back pocket.
No, the imagery, you're absolutely right. I think I was even, you know what? I stand worse corrected, and it was worse than the physics example. You're absolutely right. I went to Brahms or Bach, for God's sakes.
All right, so the concept of the team failures, to me, the con of that, not Wrath of Khan, but Khan, C-O-N, of the single wringable neck of when a project fails, whose fault is it, right? And I'm a team guy, right? So the team succeeds, the team fails. I don't think it's the product owner's fault that the project fails.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I'm leaning, and you know what? I'm not stuck on this. This actually changes with me,
yeah,
month by month. But where my leanage is today, and it's you know this. We're influenced by what's happening
right
around us,
right?
Like the last few weeks,
yeah.
Like, but my leanage today is, and I want. So it goes back to, it's the team, the product owner, the scrum master, and the team proper. I really think of that team. But if I want to emphasize in a corrective action and a retrospective, who could have made a bigger difference, right, in affecting that outcome and changing that outcome, I'm thinking more today like product owners and scrum masters, that they have such influence. Like, and what I've seen is, I've seen some sprints fail lately where I look at the scrum master and I'm thinking to myself, what the hell were you doing?
Right.
Right. You missed the ball. And I've seen sprints fail lately where I'm looking, and the team, they all failed, right? It's not a question of it's the team, but I'm thinking to myself, who should have smelled the smell and done something differently? Who was in a position to actually change. And I've seen some where product owners, I'm looking at them, and we just ran a sprint, and it was a bug. We invested, you know, an entire sprint in bug fixing, and we didn't fix. We were off target. We were not focused. We weren't showing data. We weren't picking the right. Someone was telling me we were picking low priority bugs. But that was the product owner's responsibility. And we're looking at that sprint as being, let's say, a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, the teams did, you know, so to me, the team sort of did, I'm not taking them off the hook. They did what they were supposed to do. I look at it as like they weren't.
They were doing what they were told.
But they weren't.
Which is the wrong thing from the team standpoint.
But they weren't fed properly and they weren't led properly. And I think if a good scrum master would have asked questions of the team day one, they could have rallied. I hope that it's making sense.
Yeah, but the
Oh, I love this.
Product owner and the scrum master can't be the only smellers.
That's not what I said.
Well, you think they should smell... that is kind of what you said. You said that they're the ones that should be smelling those smells.
But they're seasoned. They should have the season.
They should smell them sooner.
They should smell them sooner, and they should be taking quicker action. They should thank team members. I'm not preventing team members from smelling those smells. This is a noxious discussion, right? I love team members. I want to embrace a team member who smells those smells. But what if they don't? And who is really accountable?
I don't want to let the team off the hook and say, well, it's their fault.
They're going to fail. They're failing. But it's the corrective action nuance. So if you have discussions, let's take it this way. Given my description, what would you? You have three discussions. You're the meta coach for this team. Let's say
I don't have three discussions. I have one discussion
with the team. So what would you say?
Including the scrum master and the product owner and the team as the team, right? So I have that same discussion.
What do you say?
Of how did we get to a point where we didn't recognize? And the first thing I do is pull out the burn down and say, how do we get past this date where we were this far off plan and not do anything about it?
Okay.
That's where I always start of how... Why did you guys think we were in good shape on this day?
Okay.
And the day after.
Okay.
And the day after. And the day after. And how was that comfortable? How are you guys happy? How was that enjoyable? How was that a success?
Okay.
You know, so.
And then you would stop, you would mine it from the team, you would listen to things, and then go to the next one.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to sound like I'm judging.
Judge away.
But I'm not.
You are judging.
I would probably have two discussions. I would have what you just said. And then depending on the outcome, probably afterwards, maybe before, maybe actually before, have that discussion and after, but I would pull the product owner and the scrum master aside and I would have a leadership discussion.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
And I would talk to them about, and again, the team, so that middle discussion, I wouldn't water anything down in that, it's the team guy. Right. And I'd have intense discussions and expectations from the team. But I would pull, I don't know what I would say, but I would talk to those two leaders from that early smell, early detection.
Well, I think it's an easy discussion of, okay, you guys are the leaders of this team. You need to be setting the example and smelling first.
But that's the distinction that you weren't making, right? I really think that's an important distinction.
Right. Yeah, and I agree. I'm latching on to you.
Yeah. Hold them out there. Now, good leaders, what? They should be fostering an environment of the team where they do nothing.
Right.
Right? And the team performs well with them.
Right.
So that's their nirvana state. But what if they're not getting there? Right. What if they're not? And I've noticed lately, you know, my scrum masters just aren't sharp.
Right.
Right. I mean, I'm like, you know, there's obvious things.
Yeah, it's like shouting at you if you just look.
Right. It's like, guys, how did you miss? And they missed it for days. It's like, for God's sakes, man.
Right.
Mom, what are you doing? Or a product owner. And it's really funny. The very product owners, they complain. They're like, and they start pointing fingers. They're like, the team failed to be focused this sprint. And my ears want to like detach from my head with steam.
Right.
I'm like, oh, really? They lacked focus. And what were you doing? Playing golf at the time, right?
Right.
You were engaged. I mean, you're the very embodiment of what the work the team should be doing and how intensely you should be doing it.
Right.
You know, you should be sort of emoting that with your team. And they didn't. They waited.
Right.
Right. So they actually didn't say, so here's a leader. So, you know, and I've had, maybe it's because I've had these leadership things. They didn't say anything along the sprint. They just sort of went with the flow.
Yeah.
And folks they were picking up the wrong stories and the product owner was like, just quiet and acquiesced to the team.
Yeah.
Frustrating. No, right. I just let some passion come out there, Josh.
No, that's good.
How do we want to? Are we coming close to wrapping?
Yeah, we are. We're at a magic 40-minute mark.
Are we?
Yeah.
So how do we want to wrap this thing? I think earlier on you nailed it. I think it is the most important role on an Agile team.
Right.
And I think one of the things, organizations really need to take it seriously. So I don't know if you go and you just grab a tester and say you don't want to like wave a little magic wand and say, you know, just you're the product owner without any thought whatsoever.
Right.
I think it's a careful selection. It's more careful than any other team member on an Agile team. Take it seriously. Be careful about it. Help them, right? Really nurture them. Love them. And I mean, now I'm being serious.
Right, yeah.
Because it is a freaking hard job.
Right.
Give them help. That's where I was poking at with the two, you know, not so much the two product owners, but not being afraid to say, you're the product owner, but do you need any help?
Right.
Can someone help you write stories? Can someone help you get some extra time?
Right.
Can a project manager help you a little bit in, like, looking at your backlog from a different perspective, right?
Right.
And putting in milestones and really just helping them out.
Fair enough.
How would you like to wrap?
I can't top that.
Really?
Because I agree. It's like I'm just going to say the same thing over again.
Yeah.
That doesn't do our listeners any good.
No, that doesn't do our listeners any good. What do we talk about next? So what's next?
Next is the team on part three.
Are we going to go? I was hoping we'd go there. We didn't decide to do that, but I was really inside. I was like quietly hoping that we would talk about the team.
Yeah.
We've talked about Agile teams before in the Metacast.
Yeah,
but I think this is the triad. This is that triad of Scrum, which is Scrum Master, Product Owner, and I think the team is a part of that triad, and it's a nice segue. A lot of the discussions we had today segue into that. So next time on the Metacast, we're going to talk about the team dynamics. We'd love to hear questions focused on that. We'd love to hear other topics.
Other topics.
Requests for other topics.
Feedback.
Do we like feedback? I don't know. We're agilists. I mean, I don't know if we want that feedback, but we want a long, protracted feedback loop. I want to hear in 2020 that we suck. we do love feedback.
Right. So you can give us all that feedback, those comments, those ideas, any of that, anything plus that, on meta-cast.com. That's the actual symbol hyphen. And on Twitter, Meta-cast spelled out, because again, Twitter doesn't like non-alphanumeric characters. So that's how you can reach us. Please do. Please let us know what you like, what you dislike, what you sort of like, what you sort of dislike, and whose analogy was better.
Oh, that's
we should have like a weekly contest, like a weekly poll of whose analogy was better. Oh yeah.
I'm like really this. Stuck in the orchestra, man. I am.
That,
I'm going to be ready.
You know what? And if it consistently wins every week, then maybe you should stay.
Oh no, I don't. I don't think it'll win. I'm just personally stuck in the orchestra. The other thing is, we're going to start. I've been a little lax in putting up like notices and things like that on the Metacast website, and even blog posts and things. And so both Josh and I. So pay attention to the website. And we'll be putting more content there about where we're going to be, quote-unquote, appearing. I'm going to be appearing at a couple conferences coming up. August, in early August, is the Agile 2010 conference in Orlando. I'm going to be there. I don't know if you're going to be there.
Sadly, no.
So yeah. I'll be there. I'll be there all week. And so we'd love to hear from folks just from that perspective. So look for the website. It's been a little terse, but we're going to beef it up.
We will.
So, from beautiful downtown Cary,
yes, Cary,
North Carolina,
yes.
This is Bob Galen
and Josh Anderson. Shake
and bake.
See ya.
Have a great day.